I'd like to thank Anne Rance this morning because her reflection in the pew sheet deals with verses 1 to 8 of the Gospel reading. I'm speaking on verses 9 to 14 this morning. So we've got it covered, we have, between us. How many times have you heard this parable in your church-going life? Dozens, probably. Yes, but have you heard it yet with your spiritual ears as well as your physical ears? Often we miss the inner mysteries of the very things we are most familiar with simply because we are too familiar with them. And that may well be true of this parable. I've heard the story dozens of times personally, but as I read, prayed about, and thought about this passage during the week, I became more excited about preaching on it. I found each time I read it, God gave me another perspective to reflect on. So let's start by looking at the two men involved in the parable. The Pharisee from a Jewish religious party responsible for interpretation of the law, which even for them was often an external observance. He was a man who was seen as being dead earnest about his service to God. And we can tell whether a person's heart is in something when it touches his stomach or his checkbook. Business is business. And for many people, this is where sentiment and Christianity stop. But not with the Pharisee. From verse 12, he fasted twice a week. He wasn't obliged to. The law prescribed only one annual fast, the Day of Atonement. But he voluntarily fasted twice a week, and he gave one-tenth of all he got to God. He cut down on his standard of living for God. God was real to him. The Pharisee in our parable was a highly respected man. But the tax collector was not like that at all. He was probably a tough bloke. He'd entered the service of the Roman occupying power and had fleeced his own people for the benefit of his own pocket. The taxation rate was set by the state, but the tax collectors didn't lack devices for defrauding the public. In public opinion, they were on a level with robbers. They possessed few civil rights and were shunned by all respectable people. That's what's so shocking to the hearers of this parable. What kind of a strange God is this who accepts the tax collector and rejects the Pharisee? We can only attempt to understand this strange God when we look at these two figures as they appear in God's eyes. But when we do this, it's with a sense of dismay, because we see in both figures a part of ourselves. Look at the audience Jesus was teaching this parable to. Verse 9, to some who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everybody else. In past years, I see myself in that audience as one who was confident of my own righteousness and looked down on others. And I suspect that if you're honest with yourself, you too have been there at some time or another. You see, it's so easy for us Christians to do that. Haven't you ever thought, God, I thank you that I am not like other men, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even this tax collector? And when we do that, we become the modern day Pharisee. Often when we judge, we don't know where that person is coming from. When we do that, we don't know whether that person might be heavily burdened in conscience. Perhaps they have not been able to control their urges and desires. Perhaps they have made another person unhappy. Perhaps they have been unbearably vain or are consumed with ambition. They could well be disgusted with themselves and cannot cope with it. Must such a person go away judged and condemned from a community which ostensibly is about love? Or may they be assured that God accepts the sorrow and shame they feel concerning themselves and that God does not reject them but loves them and welcomes them as we should? We can preach and teach the love of God in such a way as to despise those who do not yet understand it or have only half understood it. The disease of the Pharisee's pride can be particularly rampant among Christians. You've all heard about the Sunday school teacher telling the story of this parable, ruining the whole point of the story by concluding with, "Now, children, let us thank God we're not like that proud Pharisee." Let's look at the many parallels between these two men. Both went up to the temple to pray. Both stood before God seeking his fellowship. As they entered into the holy presence of God, they both submitted themselves to his will and his claim on their lives. But their worship of God indicated that they had something even deeper in common. Both approached God with a prayer of thanks. But you see, the Pharisee stood up and prayed about himself. As we're told in verse 11, he was offering thanks to God that he wasn't like that tax collector. But the tax collector, even though his prayer was expressed in the form of a petition, gave thanks that there was such a thing as the mercy of God, and that even a man unworthy as he could enter the temple and ask for forgiveness and mercy. Have you ever noticed that as you pray, God gives you some self-knowledge, some insight into your own self? And that's what's happening in this parable. Both men acknowledge and confess something about themselves. The tax collector confesses that he cannot stand before God and his burdened conscience. And he was certainly right. But the Pharisee thinks he can stand before God. "I am not like other men, robbers, evildoers and adulterers. I'm much better than that tax collector over there." Consider where the Pharisee is coming from. He was the one who was responsible for interpreting the law. He obeyed its minute interpretation. Wouldn't it have been hypocrisy or humility carried too far for him to level all differences and simply declare before God, "We are both alike"? He couldn't really come to that stance. Either the holy commandments of God stand for something, and it's not a matter of indifference whether a man fulfills them or not, or the commandments of God are not to be taken seriously. Then this rotten little tax collector is okay. But if he arrived at that conclusion, all his self-discipline, all his sacrifice, all his moral effort would suddenly be devalued. Then all his endeavours would count for nothing, and suddenly he would be on the same level as the tax collector or any other thief. Surely this couldn't be the will of God. What a mockery. Not because of any loss of personal honour and respectability, no, but because of the honour of God, there can be no fellowship and no equality with this tax collector. If you want to know yourself, you must have a standard. And when this standard is applied, the differences between the two men become apparent. The tax collector measured himself by looking downward when he tried to define his standing before God. He chose the tax collector as his standard. Sure, the Pharisee knows he has faults. He knows the sounds of the wolves that howl in the cellar of his soul, but he's learned to control them. The tax collector has experienced or exercised no inhibitions or discipline and recognises these wolves. He doesn't endeavour to hide them. Perhaps his sin is more apparent to the whole community. Have you noticed that when we measure ourselves by looking down, that it always produces pride? This can be illustrated by our desire to gossip. Now, I know this doesn't happen at Holy Covenant Jamison, but I have seen it in other churches. Women are supposed to be champions at gossiping, but I've seen a few men who can sink the fangs in pretty well. You know why we discuss in whispers and feigned horror the private weaknesses of others? Because at that moment we feel much better about ourselves, because we can say with indescribable moral relish, "I don't do such things in my life," or "I do such things, but certainly such a public figure or his wife shouldn't be doing such things." Gossip, including gossip which spills out of the expose literature, is always based on a kind of self-defense mechanism. We want our own superiority to be confirmed, and we achieve this by being horrified by the actions of others and putting ourselves above them. Anyone who looks downward and measures himself by the weaknesses of his fellow men immediately becomes proud, because he seeks to make himself look good and feel good. And when you start believing your own publicity, you've got troubles. And as the Pharisee makes the tax collector his standard, he corrupts the honesty of his prayer of thanksgiving. Oh yes, he thanks God for having made him what he is now. He knows very well that this is no merit of his, and he says so. But once he has slipped into that wrong way of looking at himself and the tax collector, he suddenly begins to look on himself with satisfaction and complacency. Sure, this is what God has made of me, but after all, this is what I am too. The grace of God can be corrupted by spiritual vanity. And then we hear the prayer of the tax collector who couldn't even raise his eyes to heaven, the tax collector who beat his breast. Why? Because he knew that man's heart was the seat of evil. And he prayed, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. When a man truly turns to God with a burdened conscience, he doesn't think of other people at all, unless it's someone he's hurt. There, he is utterly alone with God. And that's why the tax collector's attitude is completely honest and genuine. He was measuring himself upward. God himself was his standard. And measuring himself by that standard, he suddenly becomes aware of how far he is removed from it. But then, that was just the time that God was nearest to him. What do we really know of each other? What did the Pharisee really know about the tax collector? We live between the false judgments we make now and the surprises which the last judgment will bring. Let me finish with a poem by that prolific writer, Anonymous. I dreamed that death came the other night, and heaven's gate swung wide. With kindly grace, an angel ushered me inside. And there, to my astonishment, stood folks I'd known on earth, some I judged and labelled as unfit or of little worth. Indignant words rose to my lips, but never were set free, for every face showed stunned surprise. No one expected me.